You read that UN climate change report, Stacey?
You mean the claim that the climate is changing for the worse and will be irreparably damaged by 2050?
Yeah, what nonsense, right?
Right, crazy left-wing conspiracy that's only backed up by every major scientific institution on the entire planet.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's mid-October in Washington, D.C., and it's barely 90 degrees. Classic fall weather, right?
Right, exactly. So, how are you preparing for the apocalypse?
Well, you know, I watched Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome again, and it's like an educational movie.
Plus Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm. Keeping it cool in spite of global warming. Welcome to Politics. Hey, it's Politics, back again for episode 7.
Yay!
As always, I'm Paul Wharton. I mean, who else would I be? And with me is the beautiful and charming Stacey Rush.
Hi, Paul. It's good to be back once again with Jack and the Line Hotel DC. We love, love, love it here.
Now, Politics would not be made possible without our sponsors, right?
That's right.
As I say, we got to keep the lights on up in this piece. So listen, you know, have you ever heard of ABE Networks?
I have heard of them.
You
yes.
have?
I'm like, yeah, of course.
I'm like, you're the only one here talking to me. Well, now our listeners have as well. ABE Networks is the premier custom residential and commercial technology firm in the entire DMV. Imagine if you could connect every single thing in your home to your smartphone or tablet and control it at the touch of a button. They can do it all, from security systems, lighting controls, energy monitoring, electronic shades, the whole bit. Check them out at abenetworks.com. Now, did you know that this is peak engagement season?
You were saying that.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Well, engagement season is upon us. The holidays are the most popular time to get engaged. And Mervis Diamond has you covered at their DC store, Rockville, and Tysons. Check out their full selection of engagement rings and wedding bands. Online, you can see them at MervisDiamonds.com.
And Christmas is right around the corner. Husbands, hint, hint.
Wives, hint, hint.
I'm like, it doesn't have to be an engagement
pieces,
ring.
Hint, hint.
You get yourself together and get to Mervis and
get
pick something
Mervis.
Out.
Exactly. And finally, the Batar Institute. The Batar Institute is the go-to place to helping you pull it all together, from your skin to your body. I mean, they do everything. This week, I got M-Sculpt.
Yes.
It's like doing 20,000 sit-ups in 30 minutes.
It was unbelievable. That was such an informative seminar that they had.
Isn't that
it was
something?
Just unbelievable, the technology that they have. I was amazed.
Well, I'm actually doing it. This is my second session, and I mean, I feel like Iron Man already.
What did it feel like?
It just feels like it's pulsating. It feels like a little grabbing, but afterwards, because it drains the lactic acid, there's like no burn afterwards.
Love it. Well, you look amazing.
Well, I'm
as
getting
usual,
there.
So.
I'm pulling it all together. But listen, check them out at BatarCosmeticInstitute.com. Okay, Stacey.
Yes.
So today we're going to talk about a few health relationship and, of course, Melania Trump.
Okay.
FLOTUS.
All right.
Do you consider her FLOTUS?
I don't.
I'm sorry. I don't either.
Michelle will always be my first lady.
Won't she be?
She's just the epitome of what a first lady should be.
I think despite the color, she is the epitome. I mean, for
yeah.
all people.
Yeah, for all people. I feel like Melania is, I don't know, I feel like she's treading water.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel sorry for her in a way.
Wow.
I feel like that's a heavy burden to carry, to be married to Donald Trump,
ooh,
you know?
Child. You ain't
she
said nothing but a word.
She is trying to keep her head.
And it's not like she can step out and have a little side piece.
No,
although
she can't go anywhere.
There could be a little Secret Service guy she has her eye on.
That would be the only possibility,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Well, you listen. So health, I want to talk about health first. We'll get to Melania because,
okay.
you know, mental health is an issue. So I don't know,
but we'll tie that in.
Yeah. So health is one of those things that you really only appreciate when you haven't got it. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, it really
you
is
You ever
true.
Wake up one day and you're like, your ankle hurts and you're like, ooh.
Yeah, you really do take it for granted until something's wrong.
Well, for those of us that have been lucky enough to go through life with minor illnesses and injuries, or maybe just the odd, you know, big thing, it's easy to forget how blessed we really are.
That's right. And it's easy to forget how blessed we are to have healthy family and loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as our senior relatives get older, there comes a point where the people who were adults when we were kids,
yeah,
start looking and becoming unwell. So let's share some of our experiences,
yeah,
and highlight the importance of speaking up early.
Right. Well, I wish we could have taped our phone conversation yesterday.
I know. We have such great conversations.
Did we go in or what on those phone conversations?
We bounce from one thing to the next. And we have so much fun. And then we get to the point where you you hang up on me.
No,
I just say, okay, girl, I got stuff to do. Bye.
I usually give you a 5-minute countdown. I'm like, okay, now.
He's like, you're such a wife. You just want to talk and organize. And
out there in the suburbs talking to me like I could just sit around and drink tea in the middle of the day. I'm trying to keep the lights on. I got things to do.
I can't help myself. When we start talking, there's so much to say and
yeah,
we have so much fun.
Yeah.
But we were really talking about this.
We were talking about this because, you know, I got a little flack from some members, some people that are close to me, let's just say.
Okay.
Because when my grandmother, who's 92, and for those of you that know me or follow me on Instagram at Paul Wharton Style, you see I'm always flying back and forth to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like Cleveland. I was born there, but I fly back and forth to Cleveland because I've got a 92-year-old grandmother, and she's had, this last year was traumatic for her. For one thing, I had an uncle that passed away. Her son that she was the closest to, my Uncle Tony, he was just in his 50s. He had liver failure. So
that
was
tough.
Traumatic for her. But
for
at the
sure.
time he passed away, she had the flu. Okay. So she didn't know he was going to pass away. He was in the hospital, but she didn't really know that that was going to be that. So that was a devastating hit for her. She went through the motions. I was there with her to go through the funeral and all of that. And then her condition, she ended up getting pneumonia, you know, as a part of that. So she ended up in the hospital. When she got to the hospital, she was in a really tough way. Well, anyway, they're all the way in Cleveland. I know how things work, okay? So in my little bit of influence that I have in the world, I know how to use that to the benefit of myself or whoever else, you know, whoever yeah. else needs it at the time. Like, there's a friend of mine that I know just because he checks me out at Whole Foods. So he's just a very casual friend, and he would watch me on TV, and he'd always have a comment, and we have a few little laughs when I'm checking out. And he came to me and he says, you know, my mom is in the hospital over at GW, and, you know, I don't think that they're treating her right. He's like, do you know anybody? And I said,
oh my gosh.
I said, I think I might. And I said, well, what room number is she in and what's her name? So anyway, the next day I go over there. I was in Georgetown. And I'm like, let me go through this GW because I'd put the name and the room number in my phone.
Let me go over here
and see what's going on. So I go over now, you know, and I say, hey, I'm your son's friend. He wasn't even in there. And should I talk to the doctor, the nurses? You know, I just let them know I was there and
yes.
checking up on this woman. And they kind of hopped too.
Yeah, because I think that makes a difference when they know that person, whoever is being treated, that they have people that care about them.
Absolutely.
Of course, they, you know, they perk up. They're like, wait a minute.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to be held accountable.
Because what I realized in I'll go back to, let me just hit you with Cleveland. So my grandma's in the hospital in Cleveland, and I'm like, okay, she's in the hospital. Of course, they're trying to get her out of there. They're looking at this little old black lady from East Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're rushing her out. And I'm just like, how are they rushing her out? She is like, she can't even walk to the bathroom. She can barely feed herself. What is going on? What are you talking about rushing her out? So I jump on a plane, you know, give myself a fresh blowout. Get all dressed up.
Because that's essential to fly, Jack. You must have a proper blowout before you get on a plane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't play at the airport.
Neither do I. You will never catch me in sweats
or
schlepping a pillow. That is not me. That's not how I travel.
Let me tell you something. I roll through there. They're like, is that Michael Jackson incarnate? Michael Jackson is back from the grave, rolling through DCA.
I don't travel raggedy. Mm-mm. I got you. Okay.
No, because if there's ever an instance, like, I'm like, y'all going to pull me through. Okay. So I go to Cleveland and I show up at my grandmother's, you know, hospital. And on the way to the hospital, I stop by Barnes & Noble and Chagrin. I buy like 10 books, 10 of
what?
My books, kind of pulling it all together. Because I know they have a lot, they sell a lot of books there.
Okay.
A lot of pulling it all together books. So I go and I roll over and I buy some books and I get my pen. I walk in that hospital with my big old black sunglasses on. I'm like, I'm here to make some friends today.
Yes.
And it worked. I mean, it does work in a way because I talked to every nurse. I talked to all of her doctors, members of the family that had come through. They just don't really know quite what to say. And I'm not saying they weren't trying to help her, but they were there praying for her. They were there for her. But I was trying to get to, why are we rushing her out of here? How come the rehab facility that she wanted to go to has denied her? And put me in touch with those people. And here are my books. And Google me. And I'll be checking up on you. And if anything happens to her, I'm calling everybody down here.
Now, let me ask you. Do you think your other family members who weren't as aggressive as you were in your approach, do you think that they... Is it a generational thing? Is it a cultural thing? Why do you think... our people sometimes aren't able to speak up and ask questions. And is that just the generation? Is it, what is it? Why is it like that? Because I've had the same experience when my mom was ill, and I had the same experience where other members of my family weren't apt to ask the questions that needed to be asked. And I'm like, okay, my mom had a stroke. What is the plan after this? Why does she look like this? What will change? What are her meds? And no one else was asking those questions. And my mom's like, you know, calm down, Stacey, calm down. And I'm like, no, I need to know because I'm worried about you and I want to help you. And other people were just like, well, the doctor said she's going to be okay and she'll be discharged and everything will be fine. But I was the aggressor, saying, no, call your doctor. I want to know specifically what the instructions are. So is it our generation?
That it's our generation because I have some younger people in the family that feel the same way. They're around their family and they just defer to the experts. The doctor said that, she'll be fine if she goes home. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. What did the doctor say this morning? He hasn't been in yet. Oh, he hasn't.
See, I'm the same
you
way.
You better tell him I'm here.
Why not? Where is he?
No,
why?
You need to be up in here. Yeah. And then I make friends with the nurses and that kind of thing. I don't know. I feel like when you feel disenfranchised and there's an authority figure present, whether it's a police officer, a doctor, a nurse, and you're in a vulnerable position, some people just choose to kind of sit back and just kind of let things be. Whereas other people like me and you, want to ask the questions, and we want to try to not just ask questions because we think we're smart or just to hear ourselves talk. I'm trying to ask some questions because my goal was, if she is leaving here, she needs to go to the best rehab facility possible. So, case in point, nobody to ask. She was just going to go back to another relative's house and kind of get better, have somebody come in a couple days a week. That wasn't good enough for me. So I found this rehab facility that had said no, they had denied her admittance there.
Okay.
So I called and I said, well, what happened? I'm calling on behalf of my grandmother, gave the name. And they said, we denied her because she wasn't participating in her own recovery. This is a 92-year-old woman whose son just died. Oh, we didn't know her son died. Yes.
So no one told her.
She had the flu. Nobody knew at the hospital. The doctors didn't know. It wasn't any of the charts. You don't think that a 92-year-old woman that has had the flu, that goes to pneumonia, that there is the trauma of her closest child dying a week before has anything to do with her current state? So anyway, I told them that. I got into all of that. I said, I'll send you a book. I mean, I'm sorry. These damn books. Look, if you ever have the chance to write yourself a book and just, I'm an author, I will send you a signed book.
That changes everything.
It changes a lot. No, but the thing is, after talking to her and talking to the head of that facility, I got her in there.
Imagine if you hadn't done that.
She stayed for almost 3 months in rehab.
What?
That's how much she needed it. She gained 20 pounds in rehab.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference between life and death. So what we're bringing to the podcast today and what we want people out there to start thinking about is, when it comes to a scenario where it could be a life or death situation, Are you okay with deferring to an authority figure because you don't feel that you should ask the questions, mm-hmm. that you know enough to ask the questions? It's just like, you do. If something doesn't feel right to you,
ask.
You got to speak up. You got to let people know. And whatever influence you have, because we all have it. I don't care if you work at the post office or if you work at Target, or I'm just saying, if you stand in your own truth as a taxpaying citizen, then you have the right to stand up and ask questions and make people know that you care.
Yeah. And as you were talking, I was just thinking about the question that I asked when I was saying, do you think it's, you know, based upon generations, or maybe is it a cultural thing? I was asking, why do you think there's a difference in the way that we approach doctors in this circumstance. And I also think it has a lot to do with, you know, if someone's a doctor, you do feel a little intimidated when someone's like, oh, you know, I'm the surgeon. There is that feeling of, well, he or she is a surgeon because clearly, you know, they have done the work and they are successful and they know what they're doing. So I don't know. Is it just sort of feeling intimidated? Like, little old me, I can't ask a surgeon questions.
Well, I just don't feel that way.
Maybe that's what it is.
I don't feel that way. And, you know, from being a professional, like doing what I do, where I know that people say, oh, I met you at that, when you did this show, and they show me a picture, I'm like, oh, I don't remember that. You know, but, you know, I'm like, oh, great to see you. But I do so many things.
Yeah.
That what was special to them was probably just another moment to me, because it's something I had to do. I had to keep the lights on. So
right.
I had to show up.
Right.
I had to look cute. I had to be like jumping around and smiling and beaming. And that's what I do for work. So I'm looking at this doctor thinking, she's just another number to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless someone really comes up and you have a real moment with them, that's when you connect.
Right.
Like when you really talk about something or connect or have something in common, that's when you connect. Other than that, you don't remember all that stuff.
Yeah.
So if those doctors know that someone who carries himself in such a way where they feel like they have the right to question me or to let me know in no uncertain terms that they care about this person, that might be from the East Side, that might be on Medicare or whatever.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But I do feel that in the healthcare system, there are scenarios where in certain bad doctors, just like there are bad police officers.
For sure.
It's like, you know, there's bad people and everything that just will say, you know what? Hey, this woman's 92 years old. She lives in East Cleveland. She's had a great life. Nobody's asking me shit. I don't know. You know, like, let's just see how this happened. Let's just see how
it
goes.
And that's when major mistakes happen. I'm so glad that you spoke up and you did everything when you say that she was at the facility for 3 months. She gained weight. And how is she doing now?
She's doing great. In fact, I might fly there. I'm thinking about doing a little early. You know, Tuesday's my birthday.
Yes,
which we'll talk
is.
About because I don't know what to do for my birthday. Every year I have this issue. But I'm thinking about going tomorrow. My grandmother and I always go to this special restaurant that she likes in Cleveland. And I take her there every time I go to Cleveland.
That's sweet.
So I'm thinking about flying up in the morning, taking her to lunch, maybe hanging out with my friends in Cleveland at night, staying the night, and coming back on Saturday morning.
Let's talk about Tuesday, shall we? Let's talk about that, Paul. Now, usually I know how you do things.
Okay.
You know, you do it up big.
Do it up big.
What are you thinking about doing for this birthday this year?
Well,
what are you leaning towards?
Well, I'll tell you, Stacey. This is what had happened was, in terms of this.
Results are in.
Yes.
Well, you're crazy.
What do you mean?
What do I mean?
What do you mean? What do I mean? You know what I mean.
You 100% certified.
That's my song, Hide Your Crazy. And that's how I feel right now. Jack, thank you. You're in tune with me. But when I was 25, I was working with MTV. You know, I did Made and I did True Life. And so they threw me a birthday party for my 25th birthday.
And what was that like?
I'm going to tell you, girl. It was in the Meatpacking District. It was at this restaurant called Meat, like M-E-E-T.
Ooh.
And do you remember that, Jack? You don't? Okay.
I don't remember that.
Okay, so Meat. It was down by APT.
M-E-E-T, yeah.
Do you remember APT, the apartment?
Yes.
Okay, so Jonathan, the owner, I used to date him. That was my boyfriend.
Oh.
Yeah. So the Meatpacking District was like my thing. And he also owned Republic, in Union Square and Bond Street, the restaurant downtown. So I'll tell you about the demise of that relationship.
We'll get to that after.
It was over a car.
There's another story there.
It was over a car.
Oh, gosh.
I ever tell you?
No, you did not.
It was the craziest. Oh, my God. When I take you down that, you're going to be like, I want to hear more. Anyway, so they threw me this big birthday party, and they were like, we're going to tape it, and maybe we'll do a show, and we're going to figure it out. So they had all their cameras there, and my friend Patrick, he was a big event planner, and he did the party and threw it together. I didn't know half those people, but I swear I did not even care. I done rolled up in the big Mercedes S-Class. They had the cameras going, the people out. It was like, I'm like, okay, I see. I am chosen.
Oh, my gosh.
I accept this life. And I promise the universe that I will always celebrate my birthday like this. That shit got expensive over the years. And then what I started to realize, especially over the last couple of years, Stacey, you do all of this. Okay, you plan a big birthday party, and then you're like, you figure out the alcohol and the food. And if it's a party, you're like, God, should I pay for everything or should people pay?
Yeah, it's always, that question always comes up, right?
Doesn't it always come
up? Because you want to treat your friends and your guests, but then you're like, well, wait a minute, shouldn't I be treated?
It's my birthday.
It's my birthday.
It's tough.
It's tough. I think it depends on where it is. I really do. There's a lot of things that go into that decision. But anyway.
Yeah, I think if you have like a party at home or a small...
Yeah, that's a little different. If
small
you have a party
cocktail
at home.
Party,
yeah.
Like happy hour, and you're passing hors d'oeuvres and anything outside of, the wine and the beer and the specialty cocktail that you have, people can pay for. That's kind of the way I normally do it. So like I will have certain things that
right.
I have decided that I'm going to have on the menu.
Okay.
And then if they want other stuff, then people can just order their own stuff.
Right.
That's my happy place in the middle. But the parties just got crazy over the years and bigger and bigger and more extravagant. In the last couple of years, I'm like, all these people show up for my birthday. But when it comes down to during the week, like a couple of days after, I'm talking to the same five people all the time. That's it. Those
right.
five people, those are my people.
And
for the
so
most
the people
part.
That are coming to these big bashes are just...
They're friends.
Friends.
But they're
casual
friends. They're just friends. They're people that you don't keep up with every week. They're people that you talk to when you...
Once in a while.
Hey,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
old girl. Hey, girl. When you see them out.
Yes.
But, they will show up for the party. And, sometimes they invite you to theirs and stuff like that. And you see them and you love them. And you have a great time with them. But when it comes to celebrating your own birthday... For one thing, it always feels good when your friends rally around and they plan it.
It does.
Like last year, Maggie O'Neill, Erica Gutierrez, Del Vazir, a few of my friends, they all got together and planned my big 40th birthday party, which was last year.
That's so sweet.
That was so much fun. We had a little tiki-themed party in Shaw. It was fantastic. That was a lot of fun. This year, it's not like a major birthday. I always put it off to the last minute.
Yes.
Because I'm like, I don't really want to do anything. But then it gets close and I'm like, uh-oh. I feel alone and lonely. And you don't want to feel alone and lonely on your birthday because you haven't planned anything.
Right.
So what's your advice?
I think that you should turn a new leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you should plan something like tomorrow. You shouldn't wait till next week.
Wait till next week. My birthday's in 4 days.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think you need to be on it.
I'm on it now. So these are my options. Yeah. I could... Do you mean to tell you the real options?
Yeah.
Tell me the
truth. Shame the devil. No. You tell me the truth.
I'll tell you the real options.
And I'll tell you what I think.
Okay. This is my thought. I go to Cleveland tomorrow, have an early birthday celebration with my grandmother.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
Saturday, I'll fly back here and I will have my friend has invited me to his daughter's bat mitzvah.
Okay.
And a lot of my friends are going and that'd be fun. Like a big fun night, Saturday night.
Bat mitzvahs are the bomb.
They are the bomb.
They are fun.
Sunday, and I have PTSD from a bad B'nai Mitzvah when I was a kid, so I'm still recovering from that. Tell you that later. Put that on the list, Jack. B'nai Mitzvah story. All right. Sunday, my sister, it's her birthday, so we're 2 years and 2 days apart.
Wow. Okay.
So she's having a brunch, and she wants me to do a combined brunch, but I have PTSD from that as well. I'm going to tell you why. Because when we were kids... we were 2 years and 2 days apart, so we were like twins.
Right.
And my her birthday is October 14th. Mine's the 16th. And we would always celebrate our birthdays on the 15th.
Okay.
And she had all the friends.
Oh.
So I felt like I was a guest at her birthday party. I'm like, y'all are just using her friends for my birthday party.
Oh.
I mean, now I have my own, but I only like five. See, but I never say which five, so everybody
thinks.
You
can never say that.
Everybody thinks they're in the five.
Wait, so her brunch is on Sunday in Cleveland?
No, it's here.
It's here, excuse me.
It's in D.C., so I could just combine.
You could.
I did that a few years ago. It was weird.
Okay.
You know, it was just weird.
Okay.
Like, or I could just go to her party and take a couple of friends and then do my own thing on, like, Monday. I could have a lunch.
I think you should do your own thing.
Yeah.
I think you should do your own thing, and I think it should be, I'm leaning towards a brunch or a lunch. I think it should be a bright afternoon celebration.
Well, if I'm going to do a bright afternoon celebration, then that should probably have to be on Sunday. Jack, I need you in on this.
I think late is the move.
You think which one?
Instead of like a nighttime dinner, I guess I'm feeling your energy is leaning towards like a brunch. Like some, maybe you need to do that on Sunday.
It's also like 90 degrees out, so.
With this sweater I'm wearing, what am I thinking? What am I going through today? I almost had a cold flash. I think I was cold.
I think whatever you decide, I think you should do something for yourself. You should commit to it, and you need to plan it immediately. I don't want to talk to you on Monday, and I'm like, okay, what's the plan? And you're
if
like,
you talk to me
girl,
on Monday,
I don't know.
It already happened. So do you think...
Oh, it's going to happen this weekend, though.
Well, it probably has to.
Why? Now, people have to work?
Well...
Why does it have to...
This is my other option.
Wait.
So I could do all that stuff tomorrow, Cleveland... Saturday, bat mitzvah. Sunday, I could do a brunch with my sister or separate. But then I was thinking, I have some friends in London. So I was thinking about
Jack
on Monday.
What in the world?
I was thinking about doing
how did we jump from brunch in DC to friends in London?
I'm giving you my real options. These are my options.
Oh my gosh.
These are my options,
go
kid.
Ahead.
It's a big menu.
Yeah.
It's my birthday.
What? Okay.
So you think it's too much? If I monitor my cocktail intake, then I'll be fine. I can make it. I've done this before. But I was thinking about if I did something for my birthday, let's just say on Sunday.
Sunday night.
On Sunday day, right?
Because you can't do Sunday day if your sister's having something in the day.
Didn't you say do something during the day, Jack?
I said do something during the day, but you can't.
And I agreed.
But you can't do that if your sister's having something.
No, I can. Yes, I can. My sister's a separate person.
You'll just go say hi and then keep it moving to your own thing? Okay. I thought you would be expected to stay and celebrate with her since you guys are so close.
Days are limited, though. I don't have much time.
Ooh, Holly, I hope you are listening.
Well, Monday. Oh, she listens, though. I love my sister. Like, we could have a joint birthday.
Right.
Or I could pop in at hers and then go do something. I don't want to do it too late. Oh, people work. Stacey, just because you're... Stacey, stop trying to make your life everybody else's life.
I'm like, people have to go to
you're
work?
Like, Sunday night. Nothing good starts before 10. I'm like, girl, you know, I can tell you don't got no job.
Okay.
Wait, so London.
I was thinking about...
He's not doing London. That's too much.
Why not?
Because then you're burned out. See, when you start saying like, okay, Cleveland, the bar mitzvah, my sister's party, then I'll go do London, then I'm back for the pot. Like, no,
but
it's
not
too much.
Confusing to me.
Because, but it's too
but
much.
It's different people in different places.
I know, but you still have to travel to get to London, and I think that's too much.
I'll sit down and lay flat and watch TV and drink champagne in first class. What kind of...
Oh, my gosh.
I don't have to fly the plane. She act like I got to do beverage service or fly the plane. Girl, please. I get on that plane.
I have to get on the plane and lay.
I get on that plane, honey, and act like Diane Carroll circa Dynasty days. Okay? I am just fine on the plane. That does not take anything out of me.
Oh, my gosh. I think you should do something for a small group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday, a late brunch. So that you can enjoy yourself for a little bit at your sister's brunch. Maybe a late brunch on Sunday with close friends. No
close
London,
friends.
No stress of traveling, not flying, but just, you know, the stress in general.
Or,
of, you know,
the other option
the time
is,
change and everything.
This
that
is
comes
really
with
like
it.
A phone conversation that we're having on a podcast. It's like, you know what else I could do?
Jack is like move on.
I'm in, I'm with it.
Yeah, you're in. But the other thing I could do, is I could do stuff on Sunday with my sister. Monday, I could do a birthday lunch for me in D.C., and then I could go to New York on Monday night, stay the night, and do something with my friends in New York on Tuesday on my birthday.
I love that. See, that's doable.
You like that?
That's a reasonable plan.
See, that's a reasonable plan?
Yeah. And fun.
And fun, too.
You cover a lot of ground, see a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Yeah, I got to talk to you about something, Jack.
Okay.
Which we'll get to. So anyway, we'll figure out the birthday and let
close
us
friends,
know.
Close friends, though. Close. I want you to concentrate on your close friends.
It's going to be the close friends. Absolutely. But I'm interested to know what other people think about their own birthdays. Like, do they have the pressure of feeling like they should plan something big?
Yeah.
And if so, who pays?
You're like, that's the important question.
No, but like, who pays? I'm really interested in hearing from our listeners. Like, do they feel like they should pay for certain things? Like, always for their birthday? Because you're going to have people that say, it's my birthday, my friend should treat me. And
right.
Then you're going to have people that say, it's my birthday, I don't want other people to have to pay.
And, you know, when you get an invitation to someone's birthday and you're you know, reading it and it's like BYOB or cash bar, you do kind of look funny. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, you're like, oh.
Speak for yourself. Well, it certainly makes you think. I don't know. But if I was going to a birthday lunch, I expect to pay.
Oh, a birthday brunch? I mean, for sure.
Like if I go to, celebrating somebody's birthday at a lunch.
I'm not expecting someone to pay for the whole table
or
the room.
Jack?
Yeah, absolutely. You think I would expect to pay at a birthday brunch.
Yeah. And I think maybe if I did a brunch, I would arrange it in such a way where it had like a prefix menu.
I was
so you
say
knew,
a set menu.
Like
yes.
It's like $35 or something for the brunch.
Yeah. I think that would be beautiful.
Okay.
Sometimes when I make my friends do something like extravagant on my birthday, the gift is that they pay for themselves. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
So I don't expect to be treated, but it's like, oh, you coming and paying for this ridiculous sushi dinner. It's like, that's the gift to me.
Please don't bring any gifts. Just come and celebrate with me is a way that you could say it. I agree.
I love that.
Well, you met a close friend of mine over the weekend. My girlfriend, Q.
Oh, my God.
You're like, who? We were just together 48 hours ago. And he seriously is like, who?
Can I tell the story?
She is so
cool. Okay, so she comes to this event and we're having so much fun. And she's like, you know, I never show up empty-handed. And I'm like, oh, you didn't have to bring me anything. We're at an event that I was hosting at Bitar Cosmetic Institute. Stacey's telling me don't tell this story.
Listen, we need to pick and choose what we're going to say on this here podcast,
anyway,
Paul.
she gave me a nice gift and I appreciate her for that. But you had an interesting situation because, you're a mom and everybody knows you have a daughter. And how old's your daughter again?
She's two. And
she's two.
Well, first, let me just say that Q is someone that I've known for 20 years. Mm-hmm. She is a true friend. She's the kind of friend where, you know, you have friends that'll call and say, hey, you know, how have you been? And you're like, oh, I'm doing this. My daughter is, you know, in school and this is happening. And she's the kind of friend that says, hold up, wait. How are you?
I get it.
That's the kind of friend.
That's totally her.
Yeah, that's her. Mm-hmm. So I love her to death. And she came in town. We had a girls' weekend. And, of course, my daughter was around. And we had so much fun together. But on Sunday, she said, oh, I want to run to this store. Let's all go together. And I was on a phone call. So we pull up to the store. And Q gets out of the car. And my daughter's like, I want to go. I want to go with Q. And she's like, okay, of course.
Did she call her Aunt Q or just Q?
Just Q. So
first problem.
They get out of
the car. Wait a minute. Stop for a second.
What?
How are you a black mother? And your kid calls your oldest friend just Q.
What should she be calling
her? If she rolls up on me talking about, hey, Paul, I'd be like, little girl.
What should it be?
Miss Uncle Paul.
Uncle Paul. Oh.
Auntie Q.
Oh.
First of all, that's cute. And secondly, it shows the relationship that you have with that person.
Yes, that's true.
You know, and she's an only child. She's got to have some other little aunties and uncles.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Stacey.
Well, he just kind of called me out on that one. Okay, let me.
Because we're going to have a test of blackness later in the.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I'm already -1, apparently.
Yeah.
So they go in the store, and I'm talking on the phone, and I get off the phone, and I'm just sitting in the car. They run in, and all of a sudden, the doors open, and I see Q
Not
coming
long
out.
After they went in?
It was maybe 15, 20 minutes. It wasn't too long where I was alarmed, but I was like, oh, okay. They come out. And Q is holding my 40-pound, 2-year-old daughter like a football. And she's marching out of the store with Arabella in her arm. And I'm like, what is going on? So she opens the door, the back seat, and she sits Arabella in her car seat, and she starts like buckling her up, and Arabella's like staring at her, and she
was she crying?
No, she wasn't crying, but she was, you know, alarmed,
startled. Yeah, yeah.
And Q looks at me and she's like, "Girl, I hope you don't mind, but I had to check your daughter."
Yeah.
And I was like, what's happening? What happened? And I guess my daughter like fell out. You know, 2-year-olds fall out, right? 2-year-olds fall out. That's just what they do.
Yeah,
but
they
apparently
fall out.
You don't fall out with Q, because Q said I had to grab her and check her. So she said this to me after she, you know, got her together, and then she came in the passenger seat and she said, "I just want to tell you that I had to check your daughter. I had to grab her and get her together." And I said, "What do you mean? I hope you don't mind." I said, "You are my best friend. If my daughter is doing something crazy in the store, you better check her."
But see, that's
and
something.
And we laughed and laughed. And I just thought about, you know, there aren't a lot of people. Well, there isn't anyone, quite frankly. I don't have any other friends besides Q that I would allow to, quote unquote, check or discipline or spank my daughter. But in that instance, I was like, absolutely,
well,
get her together.
Well, I think that's the question. Check. What does check mean? Like, get you together mean like, it give means, you shaking baby syndrome? What does that mean?
Check means... It means
not as a joke, not shaking babies.
Because
I do tell adults sometimes, I'm like, "I'll give your ass shaking baby syndrome," when I'm having fun. But, you know.
No, I know what you mean. But check is like to grab and just startle. It's to get your attention.
Right.
So it isn't to spank or beat. It's just to grab you in a way where you rethink your actions.
I got it.
And my daughter was stunned.
She was checked.
She was like, "What in the world?"
She considered herself checked.
She
huh?
was checked. But we just laughed about it, and she said, "I just had to tell you, because that's not gonna fly with
so,
me."
So I know you talked about what happened with the nanny, where your daughter called the nanny fat.
Yes.
And then you talked to her and
yes.
you explained that to her. Did she apologize to the nanny?
Did Arabella?
Yeah.
No, I didn't make her apologize. No.
Okay.
And that when that situation happened, we just sort of talked through why you shouldn't call someone fat, and we talked about
why wouldn't you make her apologize? I'm just
because God. I think with the 2-year-old mind, I think it was more important to teach her a lesson than to make her apologize for something that happened hours and hours before. To me, what was more important was the lesson, in that it's more important that someone is kind to you and loving to you. It doesn't matter what we look like, and you shouldn't say that. So that's the
okay.
route that I took. And I didn't make her apologize to Q. I mean, there was no need. She clearly knew that what she did was wrong, and she got herself together.
Oh, okay, so no apology.
Why are you looking at me
no
like
apology.
That?
I just think it's odd that your kid is up here calling people fat, acting a fool in the store, getting checked, and yet ain't nobody says sorry to the first. I mean, what is going on with you?
I do make her apologize,
Jack,
often. But I'm so now you don't have a microphone in there, Jack.
Yeah, his mic don't work anymore.
I do make her apologize for some things, but I really do think it's more important to focus on the lesson.
Does she apologize on her own for certain things that she does?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
She'll say, "Mommy, I'm very, very, very sorry."
So she knows what it means.
Yes.
So if in those scenarios, I mean, obviously, it's totally up to you because that's your child. I just think that, you know, capping it off the lesson with an apology kind of seals the deal.
I honestly, I'm just going to be real. I think we were just laughing so hard because the look on my friend's face when she said, "Girl, I had to check your daughter." It was just priceless.
I love
but
it.
I do make Arabella, I do make her apologize, but I choose to focus on the lesson.
So that's a good question.
I know
question.
I'm going to hear so. I'm going to
well,
get it for
know,
this.
I want to hear from the listeners that are moms, or even if you're not moms like
yes.
me and you just have an opinion. Like, to me, I feel like I would always end, if my child was wrong, I would have to hear that apology.
Yes.
You know, that's just me.
Right.
But you're saying that the lesson was more important. If something happened hours before, you don't feel like it's important. So
right. For a 2-year-old. We're talking about a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
So
chime in, whether you're on social media, on Instagram or Facebook or
yes, we would
or
love
YouTube.
To hear your
yeah,
thoughts.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about that. So everything ended up fine over the
yeah,
weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd love to hear what people think about friends disciplining your children. Do you think that's appropriate? Because, you know, when we were raised, it was sort of, well, I don't know. I won't speak for you, but
you
I'll speak for
me. You can't speak for me. Everybody could get that ass. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of like, the, you know,
we weren't
safe
anywhere. It was like,
yeah, your neighbor could get with you.
Absolutely.
Like, if you did something inappropriate, your neighbor could, like, spank you.
It was more family or people that were my, like, aunties and uncles that weren't necessarily related, but they were close friends of my parents.
For
and,
sure.
And they certainly were a part of the village that could get us together.
Yes, absolutely. But I think it's different now. I know it's different now.
Yeah. That's interesting. I wonder what my sister has to say about that, because my sister has three daughters and you know, she's very protective over her kids. And, you know, I don't know. I think it's hard as a parent. It's like, I can check them, but can't nobody else. You know, I could totally see a mother taking that stance.
Yeah, I only want someone to discipline her who I agree with their disciplinary skills. I know my friend, and she's a mother. She has two boys who are fantastic and very successful. So I know her, and I know how she disciplines. So it's okay for me. But, you know, when you're just talking about friends of friends, and, you know, I just think you can't be too broad with that. You got to be careful. Those are your babies. You got to protect them.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. And so I have to tell you something else.
Talk to me.
So we also got home.
Yeah.
We washed our faces. We took off our makeup. We wrapped our head. We got on the couch in our PJs with a bottle of wine, and we watched Napoli Ever After together.
Oh, my God. On Netflix.
Yes.
With Sanaa Lathan.
Amazing. Amazing.
It was fabulous.
Wasn't that just the best movie?
For those of you that don't know about this movie, you got to check it out. Napoli Ever After. It's about kind of the relationship between Black women and their hair and how it affects their movement throughout the world. Black women and Paul. People like Black women, me, formerly Ashford of Ashford and Simpson.
Right.
the old Al Sharpton.
Oh,
before he lost the weight.
Yeah, he had a whole lot more hair before
whole
he got
situation,
slim,
wasn't it?
Right?
But anyway, it's so interesting. What did that make you feel? I mean, a few things that stick out to me. There was a part, like, she wore her hair in all these different ways, all on a quest to be perfect.
Yes.
And she was trying to land the perfect man, and she had the perfect career, and there was a lot of pressure on her from her family, her mother in particular. It's always played by Lynn Whitfield, right?
Yeah.
Lynn Whitfield always plays like the overbearing mother. It's like, you will marry that man. It's like in Tyler Perry movies, she does it. Yes. She was there. I'm like, okay, Lynn, that's the mama. But she was really trying to become this perfect person, and her hair was a major part of that. And it dictated how, you know, certain things she couldn't go outside in the rain. She, when the dishwasher was done and the steam came out of the dishwasher, she's like, oh no. All these things. What did you think?
I thought it was beautifully done, especially I won't spoil it, because I'm sure you have people have heard about it, and I'm sure they played this, or they have a scene from the movie if you're watching the trailer. But there's a moment where she shaves her head in the movie.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like 10 seconds. This was like a 3 minute
absolutely
scene.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful because
she really shaved her real head.
Yeah, she really shaved her real head. Yeah. And she was able to convey so many emotions that are tied to our hair, specifically Black women. And it was just wonderful to watch her and to think about all the emotions that we have with our hair. I mean, I think the only thing I obsess more about other than my body is my hair, you know, especially for Black women. This is a major issue for all of us. So to see her shave her head and to go through sadness and elation, and it was just so many emotions that she was able to display on her face. I mean, I just think I don't know what award you can get for that, but she needs to win something.
Sure.
Because it was so powerful. It brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
And then there were also so many moments in the movie that I could identify with, and I was talking about this. There was when she was wearing her hair straight. And I can't remember
before the weave.
This was before the weave.
Okay, got it.
But she was basically going to bed with her man, and then she would wake up early in the morning to like fix it. Or in this case, her mom was coming over and helping her straighten her hair. But she would do all this before he woke up. She would get back in bed and then act as if, oh, I just woke up and look right. how perfect I look. I have done that. I can distinctively remember when I was dating my husband, I would get up early while he was asleep and I would, you know, press my edges down mm-hmm. a little bit mm-hmm. or, you know, get myself together and then lay down and be like, oh,
oh, really?
Morning. Absolutely. And I just thought there were so many moments in this film where I saw myself. And I know if I see myself, other women will see themselves absolutely. As well. But I, yeah, I've done that.
Well, I'll tell you how I relate to that. Whenever I'm seeing somebody and it's like the beginning of the situation and they sleep over, it's like I will go to bed. Oh, perfect blowout. Oh, yes. Oh, you're lovely. Oh, yes. Oh, I'm so into you. I'm so into you. Girl, as soon as I hear that first little heavy breathing snore, I put my hand under my pillow, pull out my silk stocking cap. I put my stocking cap on. I put this thing in a stocking cap and sit up and go to sleep.
That is hilarious.
And in the morning when things start rustling around, I pull my stocking cap off and I stick it back under my pillow.
That is hilarious.
And they're always like, that damn, is so your funny. Hair looks like you just got it done. It's, I'm like, I don't know.
You're like, that's me.
It's, you know, my hair care products. Oh. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it.
Oh, my gosh. That is too funny.
Well, there's certain things that I guess black people can relate to. I'm interested to know because watching Napoli Ever After made me think that her hair was holding her back from being yes. her true, her most happy, her most fulfilled, her most authentic self, because there's so many things that she couldn't do that yes. were off limits to her, even emotions that she, you know, yeah. I can't act like that. I can't act a fool. I can't jump up and down. I'll sweat. I can't go to workout yeah. class. I'll sweat. All these different things. So I'm wondering for some of the other people listening, like what are some of the things, what's in your life, what part of your life, whether it's something aesthetic or maybe it's something mental, what is there that's blocking you from really living your best life? Mm-hmm. Do you have anything?
I mean, I remember when I began my journey in yoga, and mm-hmm. I remember when I was practicing all the time and I was thinking about getting certified so that I could teach professionally. And, you know, with yoga, you are bare. There is no makeup. There isn't, you know, you are sweating. You are, you know, very physical with your body. And I was thinking about being respected as a teacher. You can't come to a yoga class with a full, you know, face. Yeah. You can't, you know, you've got to be prepared for what you're doing. And what you're doing is shedding those layers to be your authentic self. And you're teaching other people that that's what you should do. So I had to think about that. And there were moments, you know, where I would be walking into a room with, you know, 60, 70 people with no makeup, hair in a ponytail, and this is just me. And there is, you know, I do believe before my journey with teaching yoga, I do believe that makeup was holding me back mm-hmm. to a certain extent, that I always wanted to be on and camera ready and perfect. And I think that yoga helped me let that go, to realize me without makeup, without hair, and me just with a ponytail and a clean face was enough.
I love it.
That I meant something without that, that it wasn't about beauty or being pretty. It was about teaching people and helping people.
I love that, Stacey. Powerful
so,
lesson.
Yeah, I do think makeup held me back for many years.
Hmm.
What about you?
Well, I think for me, and we talked about it a little bit last week in terms of the expectation that you set up for yourself through friends, through life circumstances, where you set up all this stuff. Oh, I have to travel like that. Oh, I have to wear that. Oh, I have to go to lunch over there. You know, all this crazy shit. And then one day you look up and you're like, ooh, I got a lot of rules yeah. for myself.
Yeah.
You know? And then one day you look up and you think, and most of them don't really matter to me. So I guess for me, what I'm always telling myself, because I've got the kind part down, right. like humble and kind. Kind, I'm on that all day long. I love meeting people, talking to people, you know, kikiing with people.
Mm-hmm.
The humble part is something that I have to always remind myself of, because even sometimes, okay, being growing up gay and not wanting people to shit on you or whatever, take advantage of you, talk down to you, put you in your place, you become, some people become timid and some people become like a fighter.
Right.
And I became the fighter. Yes. You know what I mean? So whenever I feel in life, maybe somebody might, you know, oh, this gay guy over here, or just not care for me or whatever, like, I give as well as I get.
Okay.
For the most part. I'm not talking about I'm throwing down in the street, but, you know, I give as well as I get.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not averse to that either.
I was like, I was looking at you like, weren't we talking about a really fabulous fight that you had
He ripped my comb de garçon. I'm still mad about that.
But that was just one situation.
That was one situation. So I'm always reminding myself that you don't have to fight every day. Like, you don't have to always be standing for the whole LGBTQ community in any moment that somebody looks at you funny. That shit has nothing to do with me a lot. It's their own thing.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So instead of me having to react to everything and make my position known, sometimes I just keep it moving.
Right.
Do you know? So, and a part of that is being humble. And some people say, don't be no punk. I'm not talking about being a punk. I'm just talking about being humble means it's not always my place to interject myself and my opinion and my comeback to somebody right. that hasn't even really stepped to me.
Right.
So the thing that was holding me back before was always feeling like I had to, you know, put on appearances and keep up this kind of status of life and looking that way and having a bunch of help, you know, I still do that, but I'm not giving that up. She's ironing my sheets as we speak.
You are so funny.
That's just the way it is. But something as simple as I had a real block on traveling in coach. I did not like to walk past the people in first class. Nope. It was hard for me. I'm just being honest.
Why didn't you want to walk past the people in first class?
I didn't like it. If I couldn't find a first class ticket, I wouldn't go. Like,
really?
That used to block me from being able to go where I'm going. Because if I couldn't find the right deal at the right time in first class, they'd be like, well, there's 52 seats in coach. I'm like, sorry, can't make it. I really want to come watch your baby get baptized.
But I'm just going to have to send a Bible.
It's not meant for me to go. It was like a block for me. I don't know. It was something.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and it's part of what I've been talking about in terms of the what you set up in your head as like, okay, this is the way that life happens. You should be sitting there.
Yeah.
You should be in first class all the time. You need to have even like Lyfts and Ubers. Like, I used to never take the economy car because I just thought it was like, it's a random person going to pick me up. What if they take me to...
That's the same random person that's picking you up if you get the Uber Black, right?
Well, not necessarily, because...
Or are those professional
drivers? Well, the Uber Black guys...
I don't know.
The Uber Black car is usually... a lot of those people are professional, like, drivers.
They are. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, those are the guys that we used to have to call before there was Uber and Lyft, when they would work for the car service. But now they just do Uber on the side or whatever of their business.
Clearly, I'm not in.
Anyway, I'm over that. Okay. For one thing, I'm saving a bunch of money, and this is, in this economy, I need it. Okay.
Yes.
The traveling thing is a little bit of an issue for me. I'm still working through that. I'm just telling you the truth.
It's hard.
Yeah.
I didn't have an issue with coach, but I will say, once you've flown first class, it's very difficult to be happy in coach. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Once you've had that experience, especially on an international flight, yeah, it's tough.
I mean, it's all you really, gotta do really is stretch tough. Out one good time in first class, and then you'd be stretching and cracking your toes, and they're completely stretched out, and then you stretch your arms over your head, and then you happen to look over your shoulder and catch a glimpse of everybody sitting up in the back.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
We've been on this thing for 9 hours. Y'all still sitting up?
Yeah, it's tough.
Now, I will tell you something. One of the flights I had, maybe I think last year when I went international, and sometimes I can't get first, but I'll get business. But I was in coach, and I was having such a moment. I had like a hot flash. It was so many things. The worst thing is they try to upgrade me. So they come back to get me and they say, oh, we have a seat for you in the front. I said, oh, God, thank God. So I make this big thing. I got to pull all my bags out.
Oh, my God.
I pull all my bags out. I got
And you were happy to do it, weren't you?
It was like stressful. I was like, oh, this
no,
is a lot.
No, it was stressful. Okay.
It was just a lot. Like I had like three bags. I was pulling everything. They were like, wow. Come on up to first class. You're in 1A. I'm like, oh, this is fabulous. It's meant to be. I get up to 1A and there's like these bags and stuff still in the seat. So I'm like, right here? And she's like, yes, you'll be right there. Oh, there's something there. Oh, ma'am. And then this woman comes back. She's like, oh, no, I was just going to say hello to my mother in the back. She has my baby back there. I'm not moving my seat. So they thought that the woman was going to go in the back where her mother was and take her baby and sit back there. So they said, oh, we'll give this guy who has all these miles, we'll put him up there. Ciao.
Do not tell me they made you go back. You had to.
I had no choice. The whole plane was filled.
Oh, I know. That was a horrible flight
Girl.
For you.
I'm carrying those. I'm pulling those bags back.
Everybody was like,
I had so much fun with those people. I was like, oh, well. All right, y'all, I'm back. And I met a man.
You did?
On the flight, and we're still friends. He's a classic pianist that lives in Italy, and we hit it off.
Stop it.
And we talk like on WhatsApp like every other day. He was sitting right next to me. I was happy to give his ass up, though, to go up to 1A.
You're like, you're cute, but not
it's
that cute.
It's going to be great. See ya.
You know, I met my husband on a plane.
Yeah. How did that happen?
It happens.
How did that happen?
We were on a flight together, and my mom was sitting next to the window. I was in. Coach, my mom was sitting next to the window. I was sitting in the middle, and there was an empty seat on the aisle. And he was walking down the aisle, and I noticed him walking, and I made a comment to him, and
What'd
we
you
struck
say?
Up
what
a
was
conversation.
The comment? Do you remember?
I do.
You don't want to say
it? I don't want to say it. It's awful.
It couldn't have been that bad.
I totally picked him up, okay? I picked him up.
What'd you say? Where are you going? With all that shake? What'd you say?
No, we were on a flight to Michigan, and he was walking towards me, and I looked him up and down, and I said, well, you don't look like you come from Michigan. And he was like, I'm from Germany. And then he sat in the empty seat, and he never got up, and we talked for the whole flight. And
your mom kind of let you all do your thing.
My mom met him. My mom was right there. She thought he was great. I was only in Michigan for a couple days. I was going back to Chicago because I was living in Chicago at the time. And we went out a couple times while I was in Michigan hanging out with my mom. And I went back to Chicago. And then he started coming to Chicago. And the rest is history.
I love it.
So the moral of the story, party people, be open to Coach.
Be open.
You might meet somebody.
You just might.
See, look what happened.
I did
look
and
at
you
that.
Did.
See? What are the chances?
Mine's not really a keeper, but you know.
You don't know that. You're still talking on WhatsApp,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's a cute guy. He's fun. So the only thing that's blocking me, that sometimes blocks me, is not being flexible enough to just do anything, get there by any means necessary. Yeah. Come out the house with like yesterday, I was conditioning my hair, and I put the knots, like one, two, three, like six knots.
Yes.
You know, and I like wrapped them around, and I went, I was like, you know, it's so nice. I just want to take a little walk. Ciao. The people were like, oh, what happened to you? It's like they thought I took out my weave or something.
Is everything okay?
They're like, uh-oh. Boy, you look like you're really going through it. I'm like, damn, I can't even have a moment and let like the breeze hit my scalp. Everybody was looking at me like I had lost my mind.
Speaking of hair moments, don't you think it's, isn't it? It's a challenge, but it's also quite wonderful to date someone that isn't black and to allow them to get to know you and all of your hair rituals. Isn't that always fun?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I will share this one thing. You know, I used to wear a weave. Okay. I had the longest hair up to the time I did Real Housewives of DC.
Okay.
And then I started getting it made blonde. So I was getting highlights.
I remember. Yeah.
Highlights on highlights. And then one day I go to the salon and they're like, you know what we're going to give you? And I said, what? We're going to give you the Carolyn Bessette. I'm like, she did. Like, well, I mean.
Paul.
I don't know if I want the Carolyn Bessette now. Hold up.
What do they mean? Like
they
platinum?
Were like, they were like, okay, we're going to do the highlight under the on the bottom half of the strand, and then the top is going to look like it's like golden. So it's going to be gold on top, and it's going to be like blonde underneath. And I'm like, are you sure that that my hair can sustain that? And
they were like, that sounds scary.
Yes, of absolutely. Course. So that day I was interviewing Patti LaBelle for the first time. She was launching her line of bedding at Macy's. And I was hosting the event, and Patti LaBelle was our special guest.
Wow.
We were going to do a big thing on stage and do the window unveiling, and she was singing. It was like a big deal because you know how much I love Patti. So anyway, I go on to get my little Carolyn Bessett, and I'm like, as he's brushing my hair out after it was shampooed, it's coming out in like 12-inch strands falling in my lap. Like the whole hair, like so much hair.
How did you not cry? I think I would have had.
How did I not? I burst out crying. I cried for 3 hours. I went to the bathroom. I cried. I screamed. I cursed him out. Like it was such a traumatic experience. It was.
I can't imagine. That's like everybody's worst nightmare.
It was terrible. So, and that happened in Napoli Ever After, actually.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. It happened in the movie.
Yeah. So I go through all that. Anyway, so I was shooting Real Housewives of DC at the time. So I decided that so much of my hair came out, I would get a weave. Child, what made me start getting that weave? And then I got the weave, and then I got addicted to the weave because it was so thick and all that hair.
Weaves are like crack.
And every time the weave would come out, my hair was shorter. I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh.
You know, because it would just be breaking, and it was just too much because it was put on.
It wasn't, yeah.
It was put on with the hair that was already breaking. From the color.
Exactly. Gotcha.
So it was
and it was probably too heavy. Your hair couldn't hold it.
But I met this guy, and all the other guys that I was meeting around the time I got a weave goes, what I look like being a grown man with a weave? Like, that is crazy.
I don't think it's crazy.
It's crazy to me.
It's crazy to you?
I did it for 5 years. It was just
like, it's totally crazy, but I did it for 5 years.
It was too much stress because, you know, you're like two guys. Yeah, man, how you doing with you? And you meet, and then they want to like run their hand through your hair. And you're like, oh, hold up. Hold up. And you have to know them really well to let their hand get that close. Child, once I met this one guy, we start hanging out. One day he got a good hold of one of them tracks. And I was like, oh, before I could like tell him no.
Before you could prevent him.
He had his fingers in there. He was rubbing that track and scratching my scalp. I was like, I don't give a fuck that you don't got no job.
Oh my gosh.
You can't really fuck it. I don't care about none of that. You staying.
If you can find someone to scratch your scalp between tracks.
Let me give you a key now. Start forwarding your mail here so you can stake a claim to this place I can't ever put you out.
I'm dying.
Honey, I kept him around at least a year longer than I should have. But by the grace of God, last, the May before last, I took the weave out.
Okay.
I finally took the weave out. I cut my hair, and the hair now,
it's
my
gorgeous.
Hair now, it's grown
yeah,
back
it's
out.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So I started developing a product line, which launches next month.
Now,
the website.
Did you develop the product line because of what happened to you?
I did. Because my hair, it just wouldn't grow. And I'm like, okay, I got to go down to the science of this. Like,
that's really
what is the process to get my hair growing back out? Because it was the growth was just stunted. It was like a little afro, like it just wouldn't come back out. So I just had to start treating it. And caring for it. And it eventually, and now it's pretty luxurious.
It's gorgeous.
And I just got a cut. I was like, cut all that dead shit off. So anyway, the product line is getjujged.com. GETJUJED.com. Check that out. It comes out next month.
I'm so excited.
But you know, we have those things, like certain black people have certain things in common, like our hair. We can talk about that kind of thing.
Yes.
And as black as I am, and although I'm from Cleveland, I still have questions on, am I black enough? And I talked to my sister about this the other day. She's like, oh, listen, Negro, you are black enough. But, and this is what I need to talk to you about, Jack, because I'm supposed to see you on October 25th in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need to tell you now that I'm not going to be able to make that, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Because I am thrilled to be invited to join Amanda Seals, the star of HBO's Insecure. She's going to be here in D.C. at the Lincoln Theater on October 25th for her traveling show called Smart, Funny, and Black. And there are two people that compete on the game show, and I am one of them.
So cool.
And she is so cool right now, and there's so much going on in her world, and we really connected, and I kept telling her, oh, I'm not sure I'm supposed to be in LA, but finally I just decided that, you know what? I am confident in my blackness. So I'm going to get up there on stage.
Jack is like, I have nothing to say
at the Lincoln Theater
right at this moment. I'm going to be quiet.
That's a whole experience for him. He knows black folks, so he gets it. You get it, don't you, Jack?
Yes.
I'm going to get up there on stage and test my blackness and just try to have a good time. But I'm not the pressure of me not being black enough is too much for me. So my thought is give the people a good show, have fun. And it's really about Amanda anyway. Like, it's
right,
her show.
Of course.
And I'm just there to have fun. But do you think I'm black enough?
I think you are black enough, but I wanted to give you a little test. Okay. I have a couple of questions that I'd like to ask, and this will determine.
Did you know the answers to these before you Googled them and looked them up? If you didn't know the answer, don't ask me.
Okay, let's start with the first one. All right. Has a person approached you and asked to touch your hair?
Yes, they have.
Ding, 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 daily. Ding, ding. You are black enough.
No, the question is, has a person approached you and asked you to touch your hair and you drew back?
And said, what?
You're crazy.
Okay, here's another one. When you were a kid,
yeah,
did you get grounded or were you on punishment?
Oh, I was on punishment.
Ding, 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 ding. You are black enough.
But wait. I was on punishment after they went to the closet. I heard the light switch go on. My sister and I heard the belt come off the...
Oh, my gosh.
Off the hanger. We're like, no, the belt! No!
Oh, my yeah. gosh. Okay, yeah. Now this question is really... Okay, this is a question for you, questioning your blackness. And this also has to do with people that are around you. Are they... Mm-hmm. Black enough. Okay, so you're en route to pick up your friend. You pull up, you call her, and you're like, come down. Mm-hmm. And she says, give me 2 minutes.
Yeah, how many minutes does that really mean?
What does that mean? A, she will
she
be
just
down
got out
in
the
2 minutes.
What's
wait,
C?
Wait, wait. B, she's walking out the door. Or C, she still needs to shower and get dressed, yeah. And it'll be 45 minutes to an hour.
C, I'm black.
You're
listen,
black enough.
I think I'm black
You're
enough.
You're black enough. You'll be fine.
I love it. So listen, if y'all are in D.C. October 25th, we will be at the Lincoln Theater for Smart, Funny, and Black with Amanda
yes.
Seals. It's going to be so much fun.
Yes.
Check Stacy out on social media, Fra Rush.
Yes.
And I am Paul Wharton Style on Instagram, Paul Wharton on Twitter, and check us also out on YouTube. Tell your friends, subscribe to Politics Podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and
yes.
a review, and we want to hear from you. Would you let your friend discipline your kid? Would you make your kid apologize when they're wrong?
Oh, Paul.
We didn't even get to talk about that crazy woman, Melania Trump.
Oh, my goodness. We
oh,
didn't even talk
no.
about her. We'll
I,
save it,
I
we'll
skipped
save it for
her.
Next week
I just,
after the interview.
I really wanted to skip her.
The interview is on Friday, so we'll talk about it next week.
Exactly, exactly. Well, listen, thank you all for joining us today. We love you.
We
keep
love
listening
you.
To Politics.
Bye.
Bye.